Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaritamastamavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
The inherent nature of a human being is called their religious duty, page 67. Whatever nature strongly manifests in childhood, without any type of teaching or training, should be known as one's inherent nature. By the help of this first nature, the caste of all human beings must be ascertained. Right? So in other words, this is the help of this first nature, then that's what you start with. This training will be based on the first nature. Right? So what you see naturally coming out, that's then what you start training. Then as it develops, as they become purified, as they apply it, then it will be established.
What does manifest in China?
How does it manifest? Maharaj Bharat, when he was 3, he used to go out and catch tigers and lions and tie them up to the trees so he could play with them. Vedvarna. Yes, so like that.
You don't see it nowadays.
Yes, you do. It's called malecha. Lecha, Yavana, you know. Come on, offer your basis. No. That's called Yavana. Like that. You know, so based on that, then you start training. So that means they have to seriously start, you know, chanting, taking part in the temple program. And so they get purified. In other words, one is not going to, through the pious elements of one's nature, be naturally engaged in religious activities, right? So, in other words, you're engaged in those activities that don't require specifically piety, you know, which is hearing, chanting. Yeah? Then from that, one becomes purified, and when that's removed, because everything's just a combination of modes, when you remove enough of the ignorance, then you can start to see the actual, you know, more purified nature. Right? You know, then it's like, what is the... See, because in a nature you have what would be purified and what would be unpurified. You know what I'm saying? Because let us say you have a tribal culture. But they have their king, they have their medicine man, you know, they have their intellectuals and stuff like this. They have their common person you just tell what to do. You know, you understand? So you have a combination between what is the natural mentality of how they would follow the Vedic literatures, then you'd have their inclination not to follow. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, Yavana doesn't follow in one way, Malecha. And not like a Malecha, they can be very, you could say, tend to be kind of religious minded or nice or pleasant like that. And it's not that they're against the Vedic principles, they just don't know anything about them. Malechas means to know, they don't want to know about them. You know what I'm saying? So you could have, you know, does that make sense? So you could have a vegetarian yavana who's just not interested in the Vedic culture, but they're into New Age, just that. Yavana just means against the Vedic principles. Malecha simply means meat eater. You know what I'm saying? But it's not that they don't have a varna within Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Right? Does that make sense? But the problem is because of the mixes and all that, it's hard to ascertain what's prominent. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of time, and then by the process of chanting. See, if you didn't have the chanting of the holy name, then the person probably wouldn't get past that stage. But because of the process of Samkirtan, then that purification is there. Then it will come up, and whatever the nature, it will give up those lower stages of dealing outside the Vedic system, and then one will be able to function within the Vedic system. Does that make sense? Right? So here, if you have a Kshatriya, but the contamination is very heavy because of ignorance, then the ignorance is prominent, they'll act like a Shudra. But within Shudras, they'll be involved in that side of it. You know what I'm saying? So then as you purify, it'll come up, and then it'll look like a Kshatriya Shudra, then they'll come up to be a Kshatriya. But they won't become Brahman. So if that purification continues, they'll move up to whatever it is. So everyone will find a spot within the Varnashram system as they purify themselves. Does that make sense? So anybody can do so. And with an ashram, basically you're situated either married or not or retired. Right? So that's not so much the difficulty. It's then how pure is their activity within that. Right? And as they become purified, then that will function easier. Does that make sense? So that's why Kali Yuga, then the holy name is the prominent, because all these others, meditation, yajna, pancharatra, these require basically material qualification to perform. You know, a basic amount of piety to perform. Does that make sense? You know, so your pancharatra, at least in this last, then at least 50% good is required. Right? Yajna 75% good. Meditation has got to be all good. Right? You understand? So that was the Satyayu term when they'd ask him how things work.
Right? Yajna more than...
Because it's from the second age. How applicable to you in your position is it to shift things by 4,300,032 years?
Not so much.
Okay, so we'll stick to this age. Okay. So then, you know, it just means that when it switches, it means Satya requires full piety. Dwapara, you know, which normally comes the second, means whatever is the second age, it requires 75%. The third would require 50%. The fourth, only 25%. You know, I mean, you've got 25%. You're really pious. You're good. You're good in this age. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah, so that means Satyayuga is, it's all good, and in this age, you're good to go, right? So. Yes. They're devotees, but what is distracting them? You know what I'm saying? So, what are they acting like? Are they acting? What is their natural cultural proclivities? It'll be similar to the parents, yeah, because that's why they're connected. Because otherwise, you do have it happen, but otherwise, if the parents are very religious, the child's not, or the parents are very irreligious and the child is religious, it doesn't necessarily make for great family relationships. Though it does happen. You know, because, you know, so many factors are there in the consciousness. You know, so it's just a matter of what one attracts. That's why one is very careful. Just like all you have to do is think of Krishna at the time of death. That's the only thing you have to do. But that does take a little preparation. Does that make sense? So the idea is one does one's best. But the point is because the chanting of the holy name works on anybody, so therefore, whatever the child, the process will work on them. You know, it's just a matter of whether it works very quickly or whether it takes a little longer. But it'll always work. Does that make sense? And that's in connection with this.
Look at another perspective, like you mentioned that if they already took birth in the devotee's family, it means they were in pretty good standing.
Yeah, no, they were pretty good standing. But nowadays you have a lot of devotees who are very, you know, basically fixed, but now how many are extremely critical of devotees? Right? Or let's say they're basically fixed, so they're always the same, but certain aspect that, you know, they always get angry easily, or you know, they're independent kind of from others, you know, they do their own, they don't cooperate, or they do fairly good like that, but you know, in their own time they may not spend it so nicely, you know, they have their particular material things that they get involved in their spare time, you know what I'm saying? So you see is all the, you know, the ISKCON children is that you start a kirtan, and if it's a good kirtan, then they'll all be there and involved, and they'll go on for hours, longer than their parents will. Right? But when the kirtan's over, that's then where you start to see what's left over from last lifetime in the way of impurity. Does that make sense? So that's, you know, the idea is that you're dealing with what's there. In other words, if the mentality is such that there aren't very many, at least seeming, impurities, then you deal with that. If there are more impurities, you deal with it that way. You know what I'm saying? It's like if they are very inquisitive and very studious, then you'd give them a lot to study. But if they're not, you give them a lot of practical service. In either way, they're engaged, and either way, they'll be purified. So it's just a matter of time till they come to a position that it functions well for them. Does that make sense? So it's not a problem. The Vedic system will work for everybody. It's just a matter of how much time it takes, that's all. You know? Does that make sense? So the main thing is if you can get it to the point where the individual on their own sees the importance of Krishna consciousness. If that happens, then it will be very dynamic. But until they do, then it's always you have to make all the arrangements. Is that something? Is that okay? You know, because that's the point, is that why are they still here? Why would they be born in a family of devotees? They were advanced in the process, but why are they still here? Right? They're not. I mean, unless they're an acharya that's here for preaching, they're here because of some material, you know, distraction. So that distraction will be clearly visible, right? Because you take a karmi, they have unlimited material desires. You know, so the kids are just kind of, you know, homogeneously, pleasantly material, right? But for the devotees, as they advance, all these other little things go, and certain ones that are more strong, they remain, right? So that's why in the devotee kids, generally you see it's, you're very nice or very strongly attached to a particular thing. You know what I'm saying? Because when you narrow it down, then the attachment, you know, focuses more until it purifies and then goes away. So it hasn't got to that stage. So if they just continue, then that will happen. Right? So that's why it's better to cultivate the devotional side rather than that material side. You know, because otherwise if they put that focus there, they're really focused on it. You know? And they'll be good at it. You know. Unfortunately, nowadays we're even proud of material, you know, how you say, focus. And so then, does that make sense? So the point is that you take the nature of the child, what you see, And that's what you work with. So whatever it is, like they like stories, you tell them lots of stories. They like the kirtan, you involve them in that. They like doing helping around the house, you do that. They like the puja, you help, you know what I'm saying? Whatever is the proclivities that you see, that you cultivate in connection to the Lord. Right? That's the point. So it doesn't matter if it's more purified or less purified. It means they're active, they're doing something. You just take that and connect that to the Lord. Does that make sense? Everyone okay with that? Okay. A person with the qualities of restraint, endurance, etc., even born in the lower caste, like Shudra, must be known as Brahman. In other words, nobody becomes Brahmana or Shudra simply because of his birth, right? It's already there. As we said, it's just this life is just a continuation of last because the body only lasts so long. You know, you get maximum 100 years out of it. So that nature comes through to this life. Right? In other words, okay. On the other hand, those born in Brahmin families but lacking Brahminical nature should be accepted according to their manifested nature. Right? So whatever it is. So you deal with them what they are. I've seen kids that come into the school, they start off as, you know, real rough-end Shudras. You know, you basically, you know. But with time, then they start getting purified, and then they do that nicely. Then they get kind of like business-minded like that. Then they get into management, and then they get up to the Brahminical, and then they stop. They stay there. I've seen that. Very few. You know, more go, more. But you see, you know what I'm saying? But it's not that they won't go through, because it's simply the combination of the modes. Right? If passion and ignorance are prominent, you have a Vaishya. Right? If passion and goodness, you'll have a Kshatriya. Right? If ignorance is prominent, you'll have a Shudra. Right? Does that make sense? So it's... In the Mahabharata Shanti Parva, in the description of giving charity, Lord Sadashiva explains, "O girl with the beautiful thighs, a Brahmana sees everyone equally. He is beyond the modes of nature. He is pure and always situated in Brahman. That is my opinion. However, even a Shudra who is pure in heart and deed and controls his senses is equal to a Brahmana, and he should be worshipped. That is the opinion of Lord Brahma himself." Right? So this means is pure, means pure in heart and deed. So that's what he's looking at, not his occupation. Right? So he won't be. That's why he said even a Shudra who is pure in heart means he's a Shudra by occupation. But his ashram, his everything is pure and all that. So he's as good as the Brahmin. Because you require that to do those other, the Brahminical activities. So he has the qualification. So therefore he's like a Brahmin. He's equal to a Brahmin. A Shudra finds it natural to engage in auspicious activities is equal to a Brahmana. That is my opinion. So now he said, that's Lord Brahma's opinion, and this is Sadashiva. He's saying, this is my opinion. So you're not going to get much higher in authority than these two, right? You know. Neither birth, nor ritual, nor scholarship, nor family, nor family designate one as a Brahmana. The way one becomes a Brahmana is by his work. Right? So that's why if you're always engaged in devotional activities, even if the nature obviously doesn't seem to be very Brahminical, right? By being always engaged in devotional work, one will purify yourself and come to that platform because the work you're doing is Brahminical. You know what I'm saying? But it doesn't necessarily mean they'll be Brahminical by occupation, but they'll be Brahminical by character, which is what actually counts. Right? Because when that character goes higher, then it goes from Brahminical to Vaishnava and Vaishnava into advanced Vaishnava. Does that make sense? So, if they're born in devotee families, means they were advanced in devotional service. But somehow they got distracted. Yes?
Maharaj, when we speak about the devotees in regard of this, would it be three levels of understanding? And first, that the person is a Vaishnava. Second, that his consciousness is a Brahma. And third, he might have some different occupation by which he will be designated. Is that correct?
You could say it's just a matter of what you're looking at. They're a devotee, so you see that aspect. It's a matter of how you're going to engage them in devotional service. You look at what they can do. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? That they have the proper character, of course, that also is there. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of finding what would be appropriate for their situation, because the person has the skill and he has his character. So it's a combination. Because let's say he has a skill, but he doesn't have good character, then he would end up on a lower level or in some other situation. You know what I'm saying? Let's say like you have, you have a guard, okay? And you have he's very big and very powerful and all that. So amongst guards, he's very outstanding, okay? Now, if he has very good character, very pure, then he can be a guard for the inner palace. But if he's not, then he'll be, you know, like for the outer gates or stuff like that. Because there he's running into all kinds of common people, so if he's a little rough, then it doesn't matter. But in the palace, then he has to be able to behave properly, right? Guests are there, everyone comes, he has to be able to dress and behave and deal nicely. Does that make sense? So, but he will be a guard. But it's just a matter of where he'll be best situated. You know what I'm saying? As a service. Right? Because he's a devotee, and he's good at, let's say, money. But how pure is he? So depending if he's more pure, then he could do things, you know, on one level for the temple. But if he's less, he'd do it on another. Right? Maybe he wants to, you know, do some little thing like this or that, then he can do that. But you wouldn't let him work with, you know, the land deals and all the accounts and everything of the temple, because the land, he might get an ID himself. Right? It's not an uncommon thing. You know, you're doing a land deal, you take it to your lawyers, they look at it, say, oh, this is really bad, don't go for it, and then they buy it themselves. It happens. Right? So one has to be able to see combination of skill and character. So that's why he's saying is the Shudra, with his pure heart and deed, he's as good as a Brahmin. Right? He needs to be worshipped as such. But his skill may be so. But within the devotee community, then that's not a problem. Like I was saying, there's one devotee I know of that, you know, he has a job outside, so he'd be a Shudra by occupation. But, you know, he's a head pujari, he does all the samskars and yajnas for the temple. He's a really, really nice, sweet person. He does his own puja, he's been doing it for time immemorial. So as long as I know him, he's always been involved in deity worship. But when it comes to making money, he does it as a Shudra. Right? So he's accepted as a Brahmin. You know, because in our dealings and interaction, because what he does when he's doing a job, that's none of our business. You know what I'm saying? But when he's at the temple, he's accepted as a Brahmin. Does that make sense? Okay.
Can we say that
the materialist tries to increase the skill. The character, yeah. Yeah, because the karmis generally never look at character unless they see it as part of the skill. Right? You have to be more sophisticated or like that. They'll learn it just to do the work. But they themselves may not have actually the sophistication. You know, so, you know, in business and things, you can pull it off because you only have to do it at the meeting or at a luncheon or stuff like this. But when you go to your room, it doesn't matter like that. But that's where you see then will be the problem, you know. Right, so therefore, if that person is involved with other such persons, they'll be comfortable together. Because their actual sophistication. But in the work, if one's more sophisticated and one's less, there'll be a problem. But when they go back to their room, they're all just as unsophisticated as each other, so they'll be very happy. You know? Is that make sense? A so-called high-class person who is degraded in his activities should not be honored, but a so-called Shudra who knows the truth of religion and acts piously is worthy of worship. Right? So in other words, the proper behavior, proper understanding, that's the real thing. Not the scholarship, not sophistication. Right? So it means he knows the truth of religion, means of serving the Lord, right? That we're servants. These basic, that anybody can learn. I was saying, it's like that example of I think Prabhupada was there and some devotees were there, and I think it was a big Sanskrit scholar, you know, pundit and that. And Prabhupada asked him, you know, who is God? And then the scholar, well, that's very difficult, you know, there's so many opinions, this and that. And after he got done saying all that, then he called over Saraswati, who was about 8 at the time, and said, who's God? She said, Krishna. Right? You know, so it says here, she understands. How come you're a big pundit? You don't understand. So that's what it means. It's not scholarship. Because those principles, anybody can know. You know what I'm saying? Basically, as soon as they can talk, you can teach them this. So 3, they can actually know the truth of religion. You know, they can know where they're not the body, where the, you know, the soul, we're serving the Krishna, chanting holy name. All these things they can know. So then, at 3, they can know more than these big scholarly pundits. You understand? So that's the idea. Is that, and this is Mahabharata. So this is being written as the essence of the Vedic literature. Right? So for Aparavidya, it is the essence. It means it gives the most essential elements of it and how it actually functions, the principle. But the pointing out of its connection to transcendence, that's not strong enough. So Narad Muni complained about that. So Bhagavatam then takes it, the connection to the transcendental. But so it doesn't get into as much detail as the Mahabharata does on the apara aspect, like that. But it's just the next step. Sri Manu explains, by chanting mantras, a Brahmana attains perfection. Of this there is no doubt. However, a Brahman who neglects his Brahminical duties is no longer a Brahman. He is merely a friend to Brahmanas. The four varnas and ashramas exist in the 3 worlds in the past, present, and the future also. This is explained in the Vedas. In other words, the 4 varnas and ashramas, they're not going to go away. This idea is it's Kali Yuga, it's not going to function. I mean, when it's talking about Kalki, right, who's coming after 427,000 years, right? So we could say, now we're 5,000 years into Kali Yuga. So that's, you can just say, you know, we're so much, oh, Kali Yuga has advanced so much. This is only 5,000 years, right? And this is the good part of it, right? This is the golden age, you know, we're just starting. So at the end, when Kalki comes, it's not exactly what you would consider ideal. But what family is he born into? A Brahmin family. That means they still identify, right? He says, as it is now, we use the term householder, right? You say to the karmis, they know what you're talking about. Right? So all these things, they have, you know, celibate students, or they have monks, they have those who are retired, right? If you say educator, administrator, you know, business person, and skilled labor, they all understand what you're talking about. So it's not that it's something that's not always there. The point is how scientific it is or not. That's the only difference. Every society, no matter how sophisticated or unsophisticated it is, how advanced technologically it is or not, or knowledge or not, they all have all the 4 varnas, all the 4 ashrams. It's just how well it's manifest or not. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. Okay. In Bhagavad Gita 2.45, the Supreme Personality of Godhead explains, the Vedas deal mainly with the 3 modes of material nature. Rise above these modes, O Arjuna, be transcendental to all of them. Right? So it says the modes, then they that's what classify you. You rise above the mode, that's a devotee. Right? And it said there, the Brahman is beyond the modes because he's situated in pure goodness. Right? So if he's situated in goodness, he has the occupation of a Brahmana. Right? But if he's situated in pure goodness, then he can do any occupation. Right? So it doesn't matter what his conditioned occupation is. You know, he's situated as a Brahman. Yes.
The quote before from Ryan says, if the Brahmana neglects his brahminical duties, then he's not.
Yeah, then he's a Brahma Bandhu.
It's just a matter of reading.
Yeah, if you can. If you can, means he's born in the Brahmin family, but you don't know why he's born in the Brahmin family. You know, because it can be that that family, they owed money to somebody and they wouldn't pay. And so then that other person then is born in that family because then you have to pay for it. You know what I'm saying? That could happen. So there's so many ways that it could happen. Does that make sense? So that's why the birth is a general indication, but it's not taken very seriously if the behavior is different from what you'd expect from that family. Right? If it's a Brahminical family and the child acts according to the family norms, then you'll consider that they're Brahminical. Right? And it won't seem odd. But if they don't, then you won't classify them that way. Right? The Kali Yuga, then the Brahmins become degraded, so if you're just born in the family, then they say you're a Brahmana. You know, that's their thing, unless you're born in a Brahmin family, but that's got nothing to do with it. What does it have to do with it? It's your activities that make you a Brahmin. Right? The birth is generally there, but you're always going to find what's outside that. Yes. Yes, yes. Interesting how at 5 one has that faith, and at 4 he's already a committed atheist. Yeah, at 4 I say, who's that? But no, they already know. That's the thing, is certain things kids don't, you never have to explain to a kid, you know, what's a husband and wife, or what's brothers and sisters, or what's food, or sleeping, like that. They don't ask, you know, why is the sky blue and the grass green, and those kind of questions. You know, because I guess maybe in not in all species you see the same colors or any colors at all. So therefore it's a new thing, right? You know? But in every species of life you have parents. So there's siblings, there's food, there's defense, there's, you know what I'm saying? You know, because the kid asks, who's that? You know, and then they can say, oh, that's this one's father or this one's mother. They don't say, what's a father? What's a, no, that doesn't happen. Like that. So therefore, I'm sure God is also one of those topics. It's either they believe or they don't. So you tell them, you know, about God. Oh, yes. Or, you know, it's like, you know, what's wrong with you, lady? You know, it's like in Srimad Bhagavatam 7, so be transcendental to all of them, be devotional, because the point of what we were saying before, this verse is point is that spontaneous devotees are free from the bindings of the various social orders and distinctions due to their acquisition of divine knowledge. So they're not bound by him by birth. They perform him because if that's your skill, that's naturally how you're going to maintain yourself. Whatever is your particular kind of attachments, that's where you're going to situate yourself in ashram. Right? So that'll be, but that's what they engage in the Lord's service, as we were seeing in Dasyam. Whatever the situation, you engage it in the Lord's service. So. Yeah. So, yeah. In Srimad Bhagavatam 7.11.35, wise and saintly Narada tells King Yudhishthira, right? If one shows the symptoms of being a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, as described above, even if he has appeared in a different class, he should be accepted according to those symptoms of classification. So one should be accepted according to how you behave. Doesn't matter what family you're born into. So that's the Vedic system. This idea that by what you're born into, that's not Vedic. That's just some mundane interpretation of Vedic. Does that make sense? You know, or the idea like time, place, and circumstance is modern. No, that's Vedic. Like that. That's how it's defined. Manu also explains, a so-called Brahman who does not study the scriptures should accept the position of another Varna. If he continues pretending to be a Brahman, he and his family will become Shudras. Right? Because then you'll go against the principles. Right? So better he accepts that other varna. You know, unless of course he's acting like a Shudra, but then he doesn't have to worry about it. But you know, he doesn't study scriptures but he does business, then better to accept that position and be a businessman, because at least he'll be a businessman. But if he doesn't, then they'll end up as Shudras. Right? So the conditioned nature should be accepted for what it actually is, what it does. Yes. Basically. Yes, that's true. That's true. But at least, you know, there's maybe more. Then we look at it as a pious activity or something like that. But, yeah. But basically, because what I think what's making here is if he continues pretending to be a Brahmin, because then he's pretending but he's not actually doing the duties. So then that will be, you know, it's just a show.
That's the most helpful also, I guess.
Yeah, it would be. Okay. But yeah, but it's interesting though, Manu also explains that if you respect such a person, give charity to such a person because he claims to be a Brahmin, though he's not, right? You know, dresses and claims to be. You'll get double the benefit of your money you've given. Yeah, it means if it's an ordinary person, you give charity, you'll get back the same amount. But if you give to someone who claims to be a Brahmin, so you're giving to them only on the consideration that they're a Brahmin, though they're not actually, but they claim to be. So that's how they socially present themselves. So you get double. You know, but if they actually are a Brahmin, then depending upon how much they know, you could get 10,000, 100,000 times back. So, you know. But still, it's better than just ordinary. Right. Yeah. So that would also indicate that therefore pretending to be one when one's not would also have more reaction than taking up and doing what it is that you would naturally be. In other words, what's distracting you from the brahminical activities if you just accept that and identify with that. So that's one of the duties of the king, is to see that everybody is engaged according to their occupation. What they say they are, that's what they're doing. Like that. You know, because the point is that he's so-called, but if he's doing the work, then with time it'll get established. But if it's not his nature, he won't be able to do the work. So then the other, whatever it is naturally his work, that's what he should accept. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's not a. So when we say it's there, it's open. Anybody can be anything. But the point is what you identify with or claim to be, you should do that. So no one in their, you know, most, how you say, sentimental liberalism should consider that wrong. Like if somebody comes in and says, yes, I'm a, you know, computer engineer, then great, sit down and do something. But if you can't do it, then you can't demand it. No, but he feels like it. He'd like to be. So therefore, you should give him the job. I mean, they can say that, but will anybody accept that? No. So the point is the Vedic system, anything's open to anybody, but you have to be able to do it. Right? So that's why the restrictions are there between them, because one can't do that. Like the Vaishya can't do puja and yajna for others. Why not? greed. Yeah, he will make it into a business. Right? The Brahmin does it because it's his duty. Does that make sense? So the others won't do it properly. Does that make sense? So if there's a temple yajna, there's an initiation and this and that, and somebody that's not a big deal because that's obvious there. But going to people's houses, doing samskaras, installing deities, these kind of things where it would take specific skills. That's where you see is then there'll be a problem if someone who's not brahminical by occupation does it.
His reactions for doing yajna incorrectly?
Reactions for it means that the Agni is Vishnu and he has a way of worshipping. So it's like Shaligram. Because he comes in this way so you can do this kind of worship. So if you don't do it, then, you know what I'm saying? Chanting of the holy name, it doesn't matter. But all these other things matter. You know, we went through, how much was that whole? Means the offenses of the holy name, there's 10 of them. But we saw the offenses in deity worship, you know, there was 32 plus more plus another, you know, like that. You know, there's like 50 different, you know what I'm saying? Because it's more dealing with the aparavidya. It's closer to dealing with the conditioning. So therefore, the reactions are stronger because you're dealing with the modes, you know, or dealing within the modes. So if you're dealing, it means everything that you do within the material world is controlled by the modes. If you do it in connection with Krishna, they don't bind you, right? But if you don't act according to Krishna, then according to the modes that the action's done, you will be bound. Yes. Why would deity worship be less? Because there are rules. Chanting, you can chant any time of the day or night, but you can only do the deity worship at the times when the deity's away. You know, it's like it said, you can't worship the deity in the afternoon after lunch. He's resting, but you can chant the holy name then. Right? You haven't taken your bath, you can chant the holy name, but you haven't taken your bath, brushed your teeth, you can't do deity worship. You understand? So there are more regulations, so one has to be more careful. Does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore, because you're dealing with these aspects, then anyone can do anything, but at the same time as you have to have those qualifications and be able to do it. And if not, it can't be that you're in one and claim because we chant we work in the other. No, that's a different set of rules. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like the very short person is not the one to hold up the sahasrar and the abhishek, because it has to be above the deity's head, right? And for the short person, where he would hold it is generally below where the deity's head is, so it doesn't work. So he can say, no, but I chant and I'm not this body, Prabhu, and all that, but it just doesn't work. You know, just like if I bring a regular kitchen pot and say it's a sahasrar, you go, what do you mean? No, this is a pot. No, it's a sahasrar. Come on, it's Krishna's pot. You know, it's transcendental. Why you're applying all these external designations? But the reality is devotees aren't impersonalists, that they can't tell the difference between the different kinds of Brahman. You know, so you have short devotee Brahman and you have tall devotee Brahman. So tall devotee Brahman holds the sahasrar. Short devotee Brahman does not. Unless it's a small deities and they're on a short table, then he can hold it, no problem. Then he would probably do better than the tall devotee Brahman. Does that make sense? Okay. Sutra 45. Agya hitartam grahyam karmana viroti. Dispassionate activities undertaken for the spiritual welfare of the ignorant people do not go against the principles of devotional service. Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. Here, someone may protest, why must the devotee engage in activities? After all, the true goal of life is to renounce all activities. Fearing that someone would speak these words, the author has spoken this sutra. The word agya here means they who are ignorant and therefore impure in heart. In order to benefit these persons who are not qualified to attain transcendental knowledge or engage in devotional service, and to remove such persons' lack of faith in the importance of performing the duties prescribed by the scriptures, the devotees mercifully perform the regular and occasional duties prescribed by Varnashram. That is the meaning. In Sri Ashupanishad, Mantra 2, it is stated, one may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way. For that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. There is no alternative to this way for man. Right? So in other words, he's engaged in the transcendental activities. He's not bound by the modes of nature.
This shows the difference between because he uses this qualification, dispassionate activities. It refers to devotee engaging in varnashram and may.
Yeah, you could say. But it also could mean going out on Harinam. But here, by his explanation, he's saying that the devotees, because of their kindness to the common person, they act within the Varnashram system. And in this way, they are able to set example for the common person on how the common person can engage their life, whatever it is, in the Lord's service. Right? Because the common person would be engaged in the Varnashram system. Right? Interesting, that didn't click anything. Here the common, ordinary, person is engaged in Varnashram. Are you catching that? So he's saying is that so the devotees will do.
But he may have lack of faith.
Who?
This person, the common person in this.
Yeah, lack of faith. But it means lack of faith means he doesn't necessarily mean God conscious. You can have very pious, like I remember one family, husband and wife, both devotees. The husband's a devotee of ISKCON, the wife's not. So he's worshiping Krishna, but his wife won't. Right? She worships Ram. Because Ram is very religious, does everything exactly perfectly in that. She won't worship Krishna because he's off at night dancing with other people's wives. So, she's not about to worship this manifestation. But because she's so dutiful and everything, she takes care of her house, does all her duties in the family. So, family life is one thing, and then their particular worship is, so that doesn't get in the way of the Varnashram. You know what I'm saying? Or someone can be just very religious and do things because they're supposed to do that. Right? You'll be benefited. So karma kanda. Or by doing it properly, you'll be purified and be released from material entanglement, the jnana. So all of these, it may not have that faith. You know what I'm saying? The one person, at least they have faith in a particular form of Krishna. So then they're within the Vaishnava category. You know what I'm saying? But still, most all sampradayas, even though Krishna is not their main worshipable deity, is Vishnu, but they all appreciate Krishna's pastimes. So generally they don't have a problem with it.
So the previous sutra was showing that the devotees are free from the bindings of various social orders?
Yes, but so there, you act according to what your nature is. So you identify someone by that, and that's what you work within. So the devotee does that by this sutra, for the benefit of others.
So this word, dispassionate, shows the...
Dispassionate means that passionate means you want a result, right? When we say mode of passion, it's defined by an endeavor for a fruitive result. So dispassionate would mean the endeavor for a result that's not for yourself.
So this is the qualification that makes them above the
Varnashram. Yes.
They don't want anything and the others want, so therefore they have to follow.
Yes. But even if they're smart, they will be dispassionate in following Varnashram, and they'll get more out of it materially. The more dispassionate you are, it means dispassionate activities. The more the activities are dispassionate, the more results you gain. Right? It means the higher planetary system you'll attain. Like that. Because the idea is, the Shastra is trying to explain that one's not supposed to be materially attached. One's supposed to be attached to the Lord. But they don't catch the Lord part, they only catch the detachment part. Does that make sense?
Dispassionate and selfless.
Yes. Selfless, it means you get the idea of sacrifice. Dispassionate means that there never would have been an idea of a result for yourself. Because the other one, there might be, but it's given up. But, you know, generally it would be the same thing. But here I think it's just pointing out that there's no desire for a result from your work done in within Varnashram. Because here's spiritual welfare. So the highest welfare is Krishna consciousness. So that's given directly through the Bhagavat process, through the Pancharatrik process, or through the Vedic process. Then it doesn't matter. All of it's connecting to Krishna. So it's all spiritual welfare. Does that make sense? You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He doesn't have to, you know, take part in all the family life. But he does it just to show people that you can have a very, you know, high-profile job and a big family and live in the city, the big city, and still be fully Krishna conscious. Right, because someone can say, well, okay, you know, means if you had some simple job that had no big responsibility, then you could be Krishna conscious. But in my job, you know, the big CEO of this or that, then I can't be. But no, he's district magistrate, so that's a big position. Right? You know, and then they can say, okay, maybe if you have a small family or no children or one or two, then you could be. But, you know, he had, 11 kids. Right, so you can't say that was small, right? And then, what was the last point? Oh yeah, being in the sea, you can say, okay, out in the country, you can be Krishna conscious, simple rural life, but in the big bad city, then we can't be Krishna conscious. Nobody's showing there also, because at his time, Calcutta was the big bad city. You know, that was where the British Empire, the center of the British Empire. You know, when Prabhupada made the saying, what Bengal does today, the rest of India does tomorrow, it was true. All the big thinkers, all, you know, the center of the government, everything was happening in Bengal. So all the intellectual, all the cultural, all the, you know, the political, it all came out of Calcutta. Does that make sense? So then it makes it hard to circumvent that you could be Krishna conscious in any situation. So he does that out of his kindness. In Bhagavad Gita 3:21, Lord Krishna declares, whatever action is performed by a great man, common men follow in his footsteps, and whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So that's what I was saying with Prithu Maharaj, that his administration of his state then was so exemplary that all the heads of state of the universe follow in his example, right? Follow in his footsteps. So, you know, if it were true that the highest goal of life is attained by renouncing all activities, then to follow this instruction of Bhagavad Gita would certainly lead one to the destruction of all that is good. Right? Because if that's the highest thing, is just to renounce, because that was the whole point before. The goal is to renounce all activities. But here he's saying the devotees are involved. Because the point is, okay, if the Vaishnava is beyond all these things, then he should just disappear out in the forest and we won't have to bother with him. We can go on with our life nicely, right? But, you know, they're right smack dab in the middle of the city doing all the different things, riding around in fancy cars and big houses and nice clothes and good food. You know, so how is it they're able to do that? So they're setting an example how you can do that in connection with the Lord, right? Because if it comes to the other, they can do that also. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also just sat in his little bhajan kutir just alone and chanted and no problem. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you know, was sitting in a hut here in Mayapur, and the hut wasn't so well constructed, so if it would rain, he'd have to use an umbrella in the house. You know, at the same time as then when that vrat is over, you know, that was 9 years of 3 lakhs of names a day. Then he went to Calcutta and rented a very big, huge estate. He got it for quite cheap because it was, you know, how you say, everybody thought it was ghostly haunted. So, you know, huge house and grounds and walls and everything. So he got it, you know, 36 rupees a month. You know, so like that. But, you know, he took that. It's big. It's prestigious, you know. Ran his printing press and everything, and they're thinking, what is this? Sadhu's big place, printing press, what's this? You're supposed to be sitting in the forest doing something. No, we've already done that, you know. Right? So, and he's doing it, who's coming? No one's coming. So now he goes to the city and does that. Now everybody's coming. All the gentlemen are coming because, oh, I mean, I can keep my house and my family and chant? So then they'll do it. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, oh, no, if it were true that the highest goal of life is attained by renouncing all activities, then to follow this instruction of Bhagavad Gita will certainly lead one to the destruction of all that is good. The Supreme Personality of Godhead also advises, Bhagavad Gita 3:20, therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work. Right? Because the point Krishna makes is not giving up action. It's giving up the results of action. That's why he uses dispassionate activities. So we understand we're still engaged, right? So that means you have to have facility. But dispassionate means the results are what's given up. So Krishna always talks about that. We take it that, no, you have to give up the activity. No, you have to give up the results. Giving up the activity, that's easy. Jnanis do it all the time. But giving up the result, that neither the karmis nor jnanis can do. Right? And in the material world, is there another category? No, there's karmis and there's jnanis. Right? For detail, they'll say yogis, but they're part of the karmis. Right? So that means that's the hard part. You know what I'm saying? A person who doesn't like to eat, telling everybody they have to be renounced and why are they eating so much, that's easy. But to eat and remember Krishna, that's more difficult. You know what I'm saying? Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in these words, directly orders the acceptance of varnashram duties. These duties are not opposed to the activities of devotional service. Right? But he's going through all this now. This is being brought out after he's made the point that devotional service is not dependent upon rules and regulations. So devotional service is not dependent upon varnashram, but varnashram can be engaged in devotional service. Right? So that's very clear. If we went through this first, we get confused. Right? Does that make sense? Right? So, and where is this coming? Where is this point coming? What sutra are we on? 45 out of how many? 50, right? So that means we're at the end. So now he's getting into all these fine details, right? In the beginning, he didn't say this. Right? He's just defining God, the living entity, that, and the process. In the process, he's making it very clear, devotional service has nothing to do with anything material on the physical, mental, or intellectual platform. Right? And it doesn't even have anything to do with polluted consciousness. Right? So only pure consciousness, then that's devotional service. So now he's bringing in, therefore having accepted that, then Varnashram can be accepted. It's not against devotional service because you'll see everything in connection to the Lord. Right? Then it works nicely. Right? So all our points of no, but Varnashram is also can be engaged. Yes, but we're just understanding pure devotion. Having understood that, then we can engage it. But otherwise, if in explaining pure devotion, we're caught on Varnashram, means then our devotion is mixed. Right? It'll be mixed with karma or jnana or whatever is that aspect of Varnashram that we feel is being unfairly, you know, discriminated against. Right? Does that make sense? But it's because Krishna says it's okay. That's why it's then fine. Not because we say it's the rules, because since when did we care about the rules? You know what I'm saying? Right? You know what I'm saying? If there's something you want, then we're trying to establish it. Then it's okay. Well, here's the rules. No, but we chant. You know, it's amusing, actually, to watch. You know, if there's something we're into, yeah, it's like that, you know. But then when you get down to it, yes, but. And then it's the other side, you know. However, one should not accept duties that oppose the principles of devotional service, right? Like doing worshipping the forefathers, demigods, they're not useful. They're part of the Varnashram system, but those elements of the Varnashram system aren't for us. Those are for people who don't see God. So you're supposed to have gratitude towards, you know, those who you're benefiting from. That's part of intelligence. So to cultivate intelligence, which ultimately should result in knowing God, then at least then you respect the demigods, the sages, you know, the mankind, all living beings, and what is it? Forefathers, sages. Have we mentioned sages? Forefathers? Did I try to say six? There's only five. Okay. Yeah, okay. So does that mean we have, what were you just talking about? It's a word. We have debt issues here, so we're trying to work out a sixth debt or something like that. However, one should not accept duties that oppose the principles of devotional service, agitate the mind, lead to continued material bondage, create various vices such as hatred for other living beings, or consist of lustful or forbidden activities. That is the meaning here in Bhagavad Gita 12:15, because you have those who have these problems, then there are aspects of the Vedic literature that will deal with it. Like we mentioned, there's for those who are meat eaters, then there's the ritual that on a dark moon night, at midnight, you know, they can take a black goat, and after telling the goat, I'm going to kill you now, but in next life you can kill me. You have to say that one first. Then they can go, you know, in other words, through sacrifice, and do. So those kind of duties are, you know, for those who, you know, have hatred for other living entities, lustful, forbidden activity. So that's not, you know, the standard recommended lifestyle and the mode of goodness. So those things aren't engaged. Yes. But why is that rejectable? You know what I'm saying? You said rejectable, and then you give one that's, you know, Bhagavatam uses as seeing the universal form.
No, I mean like invoking the gratitude to Sangha.
But why sun god? Why not God?
That leads to it.
Yeah, but are you that good that you're going to be able to lead them through? Why wouldn't you go directly to God? 70% of people generally in any first world country believe in God, so it's not a bad thing. Demigods, that you might have a problem with. Right? Now, if they're from some Abrahamic tradition, I wouldn't try the demigod kind of thing. Right? You know, that means if you're dealing with, you know, Japanese, some of the Orientals, you know, some of the other, they would probably go for it. Does that make sense? Where you can use direct, why would you use indirect? You know what I'm saying? Because why waste your time just trying to make people good? Like that. The same endeavor, then those who are more sincere, you could make them Krishna conscious. Like, you only have so much endeavor you can do. So put it where it's going to get the best result. You know what I'm saying? If a businessman had 100 euros, and that's all he's got, where would he invest it? Right? Somewhere he's going to get the maximum return, or someplace where, you know, he might break even. Yes, so that's how your preaching works also. It means you only have so much time. So you try anywhere, anyone, but where you see the response is better, that's where you... But the response means Krishna consciousness, not money. Does that make sense? So the element of introducing the demigods isn't so important. You can introduce it from the level of the universal form. That, you know, we see that the laws of nature are there, and so that indicates a supreme controller. And so the Supreme has provided sun and all water, all these different things. So we should understand this, you know, we should appreciate that. You know, when we recognize that, that's when the beginning of all auspiciousness happens. Before that, then, you know, we're just caught up in our day-to-day mundanity. You understand? So you don't need to drop below the Brahman platform when you're establishing the Lord. Does that make sense? You know, but activities, then it's just a matter of doing their service, but seeing the element of detachment. But ultimately, it's got to be for God. Otherwise, people think it's spiritual that they went out and sat in the forest and they weren't thinking about their job or their family or some other calamity in the, you know, like this. And just for a moment, all that went away and they're just peaceful, and then they consider that moment spiritual. You know, all it was no material pain. So that's how you extend that. That's how the Mayavadis think that you get rid of the material world, it'll be peaceful, so it's spiritual. Same mistake. You know what I'm saying? Or that he goes out and, you know, helps the poor and feeds them and all that. He's so, you know, renounced and so detached and so, you know, so saintly. You know what I'm saying? Definitely good qualities, but it's still, how would that be attributed to spiritual? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So one has to distinguish that, otherwise then it's a big problem. And as Narad Muni pointed out to Vyasadeva, people will get attached to that, your external process, and then the actual point that they won't catch. Does that make sense? That's why Bhagavatam makes it direct, right? Mahabharata already does all these things, but people will just see, you know, the different facilities they have and not notice what they're not supposed to do. Right? Like not worship the demigods separate from the Lord, that they won't notice. That they can worship the demigods and, you know, try to get material benefit, that they'll notice. Does that make sense? So that's the problem. So when you just directly point out it's the Supreme Personality of Godhead and we don't worship anybody else, then it makes it very clear. Is that okay? Something else? However, one should not accept duties that oppose the principles of devotional service, agitate the mind, lead to continued material bondage, create various vices such as hatred for other living beings, or consist of lustful or forbidden activities. That is the meaning here. In Bhagavad Gita 12:15, the Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, "He for whom no one is put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by anxiety, who is steady in happiness and distress, is very dear to me." Right? So, in other words, you put into difficulty if it's something you're not supposed to do. Right? You know, if you think, I'm a manager, but in managing you bother everybody, then that means you're not supposed to be a manager. You know, or you're managing the wrong thing. You know, or you're in the wrong country. Or, you know, something's not right. Yes?
Couldn't it also be that you're a manager, but the rule is wrong?
Yeah, well, that's the point. There's something wrong there. You know, so you're not understanding the field properly, so you're not dealing properly, or you don't understand the technique, or you can manage, but it makes you an anxiety, so therefore you turn everybody else into anxiety. Or you're managing and people get in the way, so then you end up you don't like them and get upset with it. So that's what should be avoided. So the best thing is you give up the, you know, directly the devotional element. Just directly accept the proper attitude and avoid what's not. But if you can't, if it's dependent upon or heavily influenced by the material endeavor, the material situation, then you change the situation. You know what I'm saying? Like you have the temple president. He's a good manager. You know, organizes really well, but, you know, nothing ever goes right because everybody else is such an idiot and not responsible and not this and that. And they go on for years like this and everybody doesn't like them, and then at one point they just get upset and they step down and everybody else is very happy also, and then they just go on with their life. And you talk to them after, yeah, this and that, why go to such anxiety? So, you know what I'm saying? So, in other words, good, but apply it somewhere else. That means they're expert. They're focused, they can make a plan, they can execute it, but they're just applying it in the wrong area. You know what I'm saying? On the material platform. Now, if they could appreciate the elements of humility and seeing oneself as a servant and all that, then they might be able to purify it and then apply it into this situation. Does that make sense? Bhagavad Gita 17:6. The Supreme Personality of Godhead also declares, "Those who undergo severe austerities and penance not recommended in the scriptures, performing them out of pride, egotism, lust, and attachment, who are impelled by passion, and who torture the bodily organs as well as the supersoul dwelling within, are to be known as demons." So, you know, sometimes these nice modern systems of, how you say, you know, fasting and building of the rebuilding of the body and other, these things aren't exactly worthwhile, as the poet mentioned here. Right? If it actually has some benefit, that's one thing. But if it doesn't, so that means these are not recommended, and they're performed pride, egoism, lust, attachment. So it means that you want some benefit from it. Impelled by passion means that you're going to get a benefit. So those things should be avoided. Yeah, so it has a point. It means your system has a lot of stuff in it, so the raw food is not going to add any fat to it, at least one wouldn't expect, you know. And because of the fibrous nature of what they're eating, it's going to clear everything out of their system. So from the beginning, it may actually be beneficial. Right, because they're just clearing the system out. But once the system's cleared, now it's not a diet for a human being. It's a diet for a cow. You know what I'm saying? Raw foods are meant for animals, not for humans.
But
I'm saying.
But that says that the best diet for a Brahmana is just fruits.
Fruits, but fruits aren't what we're talking about here. It says just fruits.
If a Brahmana can subsist on fruits, that's best.
Fruits, are you sure that's what he's saying? Sure he's not saying falahar?
I don't know the origin.
So that's the point. Because in India, you have saintly persons who will live on fruit and milk, like that. Or you have those who will take it beyond fruit, milk, and anything that's non-grain. But you do see sadhus who just live on fruit and milk, but milk's included. You know, so you have to, so it says falahar, it means a non-grain diet. Does that make sense? It's just like when it says uncooked, it doesn't mean raw. So many times we interpret according to our own ideas of what it is. That's what he's saying. It's not what is the tradition. That's why the scriptures and tradition are important. Otherwise one may misapply. Because the raw has something there. As you're eating like that, so it'll clear it up. But then after that, just like in Ayurveda, they'll do something to clear the system out. But once it's cleared out, then they'll never agree to stay like that. Because if there's no ghee and stuff going into the system, then the intestines don't have anything to protect them. And then you can get infections and all kinds of stuff. Because how long do the raw food people stay on raw food? Long enough to write a book, but then after that, you don't hear of a second book. You know what I'm saying? Maybe, but generally if you check, then it's not like that. They'll have something here and there. You know, so they can't. It's not an appropriate diet. Because it's not recommended. It's not practice. It's not tradition. So you have to be able to understand the difference between the two. Because when it says they're falahar, it means no grains. But they're eating grains. They're just raw. You know, so they work for a specific illness, and then when that illness is over, they don't have a position.
Sometimes it's also mixed something with laziness.
Mixed with laziness.
It's easier to eat raw than cook.
No, it's easier to call on the phone and have it delivered. That's actually the easiest. Because even raw, you got to make some endeavor. I mean, of course, you have to throw away the cardboard boxes from the delivery.
You just live in the temple and eat the prasadam.
Yeah, that's the easiest. You live in the temple, eat the prasadam. You don't have no phone calls, you know, no nothing. You just okay. In Bhagavad Gita 3:20-21, 3:29. The Supreme Personality of Godhead explains, even kings like Janaka and others attain the perfectional stage by performance of prescribed duties. Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work. Because whatever work is done, if the result is for Krishna, it's devotional service. Right? So whether it's just directly Bhagavat, Pancharatrik, Vedic, or any combination, it will please the Lord. Right? So he's saying by proper performance of the duties, then others get the benefit. Whatever action is performed by a great man, common men follow in his footsteps. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. Bewildered by the modes of material nature, the ignorant fully engage themselves in material activities and become attached, but the wise should not unsettle them, although these duties are inferior due to the performer's lack of knowledge. So the point is, they're attached to the activity. You don't have to unsettle them that the activity is wrong. It's a matter of the focus. It's connection to the Lord. That's what's missing. A person's attached to their business, their family, their facilities. That's not the problem. The problem is none of that's connected to the Lord. Because guaranteed, no matter who it is on this planet, you will bump into and preach to Janaka. Kings like Janaka had way more money and facilities and, you know, respect and service than anybody you'll find nowadays. So if Janaka could do, they can do. Is that okay?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitāya Gaura Prema Nandini.